Another feature of Roe is Roe really isn't about the woman's choice, is it? It's about the doctor's freedom to practice his profession as he thinks best. It wasn't woman-centered. It was physician-centered.
So Brian, I'm excited to have you on the Pro-Life Team podcast again. Would you introduce yourself as if you were speaking to a group of pregnancy clinic leaders, executive directors of pregnancy clinics, and that caliber of people?
Yes. Well, it's my honor because if you're involved in the pro-life movement, you're involved in the most important effort of our lifetime, and it can't be overemphasized. We know that in the Ten Commandments, it says, thou shalt not kill, but it's much more specific. It's referring to killing the innocent. And protecting the innocent has been a hallmark of Western civilization, not just of Judeo-Christian culture, but literally protecting the innocent is the reason that any society has policemen or laws, to prevent someone with evil intent, what's called a miscreant, someone with bad motives, from taking the life of someone who cannot protect themselves. That's what the pro-life movement, in essence, is about. So you're doing that. You're providing a resource for vulnerable young women and their babies. And that has to be done, again, as a Christian virtue. We're called to do that. I was naked and you clothed me. I was hungry and you fed me. So this is what's known as an act of spiritual mercy. And I personally, our family, gives to crisis pregnancy centers, and we're actively involved in the crisis pregnancy center movement. I do want to make a distinction, though, because there's Supreme Court decisions at stake. And these are decisions regarding the law. Now, when you're at a crisis pregnancy center, you're not there as a lawyer. You're not there regarding the law. You're there as a human being with other human beings, exercising Christian virtue. That is a work of corporal mercy, according to traditional Orthodox Christianity. But what we're talking about in the right to life, in this debate for the right to life, that's a legal right. And America's founders asserted that it's a self-evident truth, that it's revealed in the laws of nature and of nature's God, that all of us are created by a creator, endowed by that creator with certain inalienable rights. And the first among those is the right to life. So I want to address us to that. Obviously, if you're caring for moms and babies, you're doing good work. But that, again, is a work of corporal mercy, a work of mercy. We're speaking now of our entire culture's laws, values, how the government spends its money, where it targets its money. And right now in many states, it is targeting government money at killing those same babies you want to save. And you cannot outspend them. I give big chunks of my money, and many listeners big chunks of their personal money. But if the government is superimposing a culture of death and funding it, and now I want to deal with our present moment. Our present moment is we have a new Supreme Court decision, and people have hailed it. We've won! Now we've won! And they don't understand this legal decision. And so I'm going to spend just a little time right now explaining how we got here through Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton, companion decisions. Again, please look them up, check my work. Don't believe me because I'm telling you there were two decisions that were conjoined on January 22nd, 1973. Very important to know that. Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton, they were then referred to as the Roe regime. of the Roe Regiment. The media is lying to you. Again, even I don't care what you feel about President Trump, but one thing you need to know, he was right. The media is lying to you. And the way lies are usually sold through propaganda, the media is a form of propaganda. It's through language. And again, go back if you are familiar with the book 1984 and how an entire culture is brought under sway of a centralized control. It's through language and what's called newspeak. And if you're paying attention to our society right now, you hear that. If you listen to what the words are, they're changing the meanings of words. They want you to feel certain implications from what they're saying, but they want you to come to very specific conclusions that aren't actually in what they're saying. So I want to look at one word in particular that people have attached huge significance to, but it's not there. The word is overturn. Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton actually have been adjusted. That's what happened in the Casey decision. But it hasn't been overturned. We haven't won. The battle's not over. I have pro-life friends who have people I've known for years in this battle that have come up to me and said, hey, it's over. Roe v. Wade started this, and now the Dobbs decision has ended it. Hallelujah! We have won! We've won! My friends, we have only just begun to fight. And if you think we've won and that it's over, that's what the media's message was. Remember, for 2 months, literally just over 7 weeks, the decision had been released. And the media started pounding. These pro-lifers are going to take away all of your freedom. They hate women. This is the end of the world. For 2 months, it was beat into the brains of every American by the popular media. And I've been disappointed by pro-lifers who've accepted their definition of terms. At the beginning of a football game, there are clear lines. At the beginning of a football game, there's a coin toss. At the beginning of a football game, there's an agreement that this is our battle on this gridiron. This is what we're dealing with, and the referee tosses the coin. But you don't understand. The referees, the media, they're changing. They're moving the goalposts constantly for you. They're changing what the issue's about. They're redefining where you can go on that field. They're changing the chalk lines, and pro-lifers don't understand it, and they get lost, and they're in a spiritual fog. So I'm going to spend a little time today talking about what did we get in the Dobbs decision? Is Roe overturned? Really? Then why are babies dying? Why is this going on still? Well, we're saving a few. Yes, that's good. And we saved a few even before Dobbs. That's a good thing. It's not been overturned in the sense that people have said and that the media has said. It's been adjusted. Because unless you know what Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton actually did, you have been confused by the media. And I know we've talked about this before, but it's important that you be a reader of the past so you can understand you don't want to repeat it. Those who have forgotten history are condemned to repeat it. Another way of putting that is history doesn't repeat, but it certainly echoes. You have to learn by what's gone ahead. And many Americans, and again, I'm one. I'm an American. So the fault of our education system really goes back to John Dewey. That's another chapter. But most Americans are taught to disregard the past, kind of live in their own emotional moment. That's the center of the universe. And your knowledge of the past is to be pushed into the past. And now we're moving forward. We're progressing. Society's progressing. So I want to explain to you, no, you have to understand the past. It's prologue. The past is prologue to where we are now. And I do want to spend just a moment talking about Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton. Remember, that's what it was all about. First, know that the abortion debate did not begin there. As I started out by saying, this has been an issue through Western civilization. Hippocrates, even before the Christian era, Hippocrates swore, I will not use my considerable knowledge of human beings to ever intentionally kill an innocent human being. That's the Hippocratic Oath. And in like manner, I will not give a woman a concoction that will perform an abortion. Now, remember, he says in like manner in the Greek, it's translated in like manner. In other words, it's the same issue. Performing an abortion is killing a vulnerable human being. And it's critically important that that be recognized. This has been the hallmark of Western civilization, as I said earlier. It's the reason every society has a policeman, has someone there empowered by the government to protect life. To protect life. And if they do take life, it has to be under very, very clear guidelines. That's why every policeman actually has a civil authority over them, the police board. And if they can make up their own rules, because they can kill, policemen have guns, you live in a police state. Now, every society has also had an army, a military. If they can make up their own rules and not accountable to the higher laws, the higher authority, that means you live in a military dictatorship. If you live in a society where people with the knowledge and ability to kill in the name of medicine no longer have any rules, you can't trust medicine. You live in a medical dictatorship. And many people, if you've studied what Dr. Fauci has done, Dr. Fauci didn't take the Hippocratic Oath. Sorry. But I want you to understand right now with our debate where we're at, because it's not over. Babies are dying. I understand the number. There's 89,000 have not died since Dobbs, because there are states, roughly half of the states had pre-existing laws which were allowed to trigger and go in. But even there, let's talk about what Dobbs did, because half of the state said, no way, we're having abortion all the time. Look at the West Coast and look at the East Coast. What they mean by choice, again, use your words carefully. They mean I get to choose to have an abortion because I want one. It's my choice. I don't need a reason. And yet, the media will use that word and they'll talk about someone like George H.W. Bush or even Donald Trump, who says, no, I want there to be exceptions for the very difficult circumstances. I don't want unlimited abortion. I'm opposed to unlimited abortion. But we need to have some recognition that there are difficult circumstances. And you've heard those. It's another program. I'd be glad to talk about them. What about rape? What about incest when it comes to the law? We already know as Christians, no, that baby is still a baby. But the question is now the law. How do we enforce laws to protect the other babies? Go ahead. Did you want to address something?
Yeah. So I think we should probably go ahead and start talking about Ohio. That was one of the things that you mentioned that you wanted to voice some thoughts about. And I think that would be very timely. So you mentioned in this email, Ohio was crushed and now has unlimited abortion. And then Nebraska looks like it might be the next target.
That's the next.
What are your thoughts?
You know, California.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
And I'm just pointing out, the reason I gave you that predicate is so that you will understand now why this is happening. Because the Dobbs decision is not the decision we wanted. The Dobbs decision only adjusted, but did not stop, what Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton introduced. The Dobbs decision was almost identical to the Dred Scott decision. And you need to know your history. If you don't know American history, you're not a good American. And if you understand the Dred Scott decision, they expected the Supreme Court to solve the whole slavery issue. Thank God the Supreme Court's going to deal with this. And they came down with the Dred Scott decision. If you were a pro-lifer, an anti-slavery person, and the Dred Scott decision came down, and you celebrated it, you would demonstrate you're foolish and poorly educated. Because the Dred Scott decision said, okay, we're going to have two kinds of states. We're going to have slave states and free states. But it said more, because Dred Scott had come from a slave state, went to a free state to be free and claimed his freedom. But the Supreme Court said, no. No. Dred Scott can be taken away by slavers. We will enforce pro-slavery laws in free states. Do you understand that's what Dred Scott did? Do you understand that's the reason that Lincoln was upset? The Dred Scott decision didn't solve everything. It didn't solve the slavery debate. It made it exponentially worse. There's another decision in American history. Again, if you're an American, please go back to your American history. And Lincoln had to debate Douglas, the sponsor of the Kansas-Nebraska Act. The Kansas-Nebraska Act specifically was dealing with slavery. And the Kansas-Nebraska Act said, okay, enough of the Missouri Compromise, where if you get a free state and a slave state, they have to come in together so that we're going to be tied all the time. The Kansas-Nebraska Act was very explicit. It said, well, and this is literally, he says, you should read those debates. You can still read them. At that time, the newspaper was the internet of the era, and every town, village, and hamlet had a newspaper. And it was either pro-slavery or anti-slavery. It was the issue of their time, just as abortion is for your time. Every newspaper published those debates. A series of six debates throughout Illinois. They're powerful. I recommend you read them if you're an American and you're concerned about where we're going. You need to know our history. And the abortion issue and the slavery issue are very much the same issue. You cannot say that you own another human being. And you cannot kill a human being you claim to own. It's the same issue. That's a human life. So read those debates, but every American read those debates and saw the challenge. And this is what led up to the Civil War. The Dred Scott decision actually favored slavery. It admitted, yeah, there's some free states, but we're going to let slavery creep in anyway, like it just did in Ohio. Like they intend to do in Nebraska, like the media, who has more money than you and I can possibly raise. They're going to spend their resources to overturn pro-life laws. Let's go back, though, to Kansas-Nebraska and the idea of popular sovereignty. And what, literally, read Senator Douglas. He said, I'm a Northern Democrat. I don't own slaves. I'm personally opposed to slavery. I just want those who want to choose it to be free to choose it. And that's in his debate. Things haven't changed at all. So Lincoln insisted on these debates because the idea of popular sovereignty is, oh, you're going to win in Ohio? You have a pro-life law in Ohio? Oh, we're going to bring it back. We're going to keep pounding pro-slavery, pro-choice ideology. Pound it, pound it, pound it, pound it, until you change it back. So the Dobbs decision didn't settle it. The Dobbs decision, like Dred Scott, like the Kansas-Nebraska Act, is the predicate for this division. And as you and I discussed earlier, you see it in Ohio. We're now going to see it in Nebraska. These incredible fights. And many pro-lifers think, and I've told me, well, thank God the fight's over. No, this fight isn't over. It's just begun. And I want to prevent us from going into a civil war. But policy is what wars are about. Again, there's a very famous author on the principles of war. His name is von Clausewitz, Prussian. Read in every war college. And this is what von Clausewitz says about war. War is the pursuit of policy by other means. We are in a war for policy. And if you think we're not, and if you think it's over, you have been seduced by the cultural media. You are succumbing to the zeitgeist. We have to bring clarity to what this is about. It's about legal protection for innocent life. And yes, we are in a situation that some women do not want to succumb to that pressure. And yes, we want to help those women. But Corrie Ten Boom didn't end World War II. Corrie Ten Boom did not bring an end to the Nazi ideology. She did resist it. She's one of my personal heroes. If you don't know Corrie Ten Boom, the Dutch woman who hid Jews. And she was one of many. They're to be honored. But we had to stop evil ideology from controlling governments. That's exactly what Bibi Netanyahu has to do right now. And there are people who think, well, Hamas, it's terrible. You know what? They beheaded babies. They're really evil. That's right. That is right. But it's not because those were babies that it was evil. I'm emotionally very upset, especially if someone kills an innocent baby. But it isn't because of my emotions. And it isn't because I like babies and babies are cute. I like them. It's because they're innocent. And Hamas, as a government, remember, they have been given autonomy. They have their own government. And that government said, we're going to kill the innocent to get our way. We're going to kill innocent babies, innocent grandmas, innocent men and women who are Jewish. We're going to force ourselves by killing the innocent. That is truly evil. And thankfully, there are people who recognize that. That government itself, and I stand with Bibi Netanyahu, if you can't tell, the government of Hamas must come to an end, just as National Socialism must come to an end. We're not going to make a truce with the Nazis. Some people wanted to, even some Americans, if you don't know your history. If you don't know your history, it was popular to want to say, hey, this is a disagreement in Europe, a political thing. And even the guy who crossed the Atlantic, who's the guy who soloed across the Atlantic? You know of whom I speak? Charles Lindbergh. Charles Lindbergh was an icon of the media of that time. He was a rock star. And he was telling people, look, let the National Socialists, they're healing Germany. We need to stay out and not be involved. Thank God that ideology, thank God that fog of confusion. And again, remember, the media gets what it wants through fogging people's thinking, using words that are misleading. And thank God we did oppose the Nazis, because if we didn't, sprechen Sie Deutsch, it would have changed all of history. So it's important that we oppose evil. And when evil is used by a government, we must pursue just government. For this reason, governments are instituted among men, said our founders, that there are higher laws that must be followed. And they've been revealed through nature, by the God of nature, and in the laws of nature which he's established. You need to be a deeper thinker if you're pro-life. If you're only pro-life because you have feelings about babies, we all do. I'm with you. But that's not the predicate for the legal right to life. So, back to Dobbs. I know I'm not giving really fun stuff. I'd love to be able to give you fun stuff. I'm giving you instructions on the battle that's before us in every state. So the Supreme Court in Dobbs said, look, we're going to leave it up to popular sovereignty. It's going to be decided by the by the people themselves, popular, through their elected representatives. That's what the Supreme Court decision said in Dobbs, this recent decision from 2022. That's what was said. But now, and you're going to help me, Jacob, because many pro-lifers have not read and understood Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton. Remember, the companion decisions. Many haven't read them and are misled. I'll quickly summarize. Justice Blackmun was a very effective defense attorney. He loved doctors. He said personally he wanted to be a doctor when he grew up, but he ended up being a lawyer. He was the attorney for the Mayo Clinic for many years, both in private practice, and then he was the in-house attorney for the doctors of the Mayo Clinic. If you look at Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton, its companion decision, you must understand what he was doing. He wanted to get to his conclusion that we now need to overturn all the laws in 73. Every state had good and just laws that protected innocent babies, that gave deference to their moms before 73. He was about to unleash holy hell. He was about to unleash a dam from the highest level and say the whole nation is going to have abortion everywhere. No state is going to be able to protect their babies. He was about to do that, but he understood as a lawyer the nature of reasoning and presenting ideas. And he used in Roe what's called a prolepsis. Big word. Look it up later. Prolepsis. A prolepsis is a rhetorical device. It's been around for as long as people have been talking. A prolepsis is when you're going to give somebody really bad news they're not going to like, but the preliminary discussion is designed to confuse and mislead them about what they're about to hear so they don't take it. And you see this with Johnny Cochran in the OJ debate. And literally, those who followed that debate, maybe, Jacob, you were around then, right?
Mm-hmm.
The OJ debate, it literally was televised. And the preliminary, it went on for months. And there are all sorts of different things. Well, you know, Cato Kaelin heard somebody hitting golf balls against his house. That's an issue. We need to talk about that. And look at this footprint here in the garden. Who left that footprint? We're going to get to whether or not OJ killed, but we need to find all this other stuff. There's distracting things you need to think about first. And what Roe v. Wade is a distraction about, you know, there's overpopulation. You know, let's talk about this and that. Women are in great need and they don't have help when they're pregnant. And if a girl is 18 years old and 2 years later she has this two-year-old toddler, have you ever had to raise a two-year toddler? She's going to need help. There's so many pressures on women. And Roe v. Wade is a prolepsis. Here are dozens and dozens and dozens of reasons why what he's about to tell you would knock your socks off, but he's going to make it easy. And that's what a prolepsis is. You think of that, those of you familiar with literature and Shakespeare and Julius Caesar, Mark Antony, you don't realize what he's about to do. Mark Antony is about to indict Brutus and the conspirators as murderers. But that isn't how he starts. If you remember the famous presentation, friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. We don't come to praise Caesar, but to bury him. And then the rest of his speech is praising Caesar. Then the rest of the speech is implying that, oh, Brutus, even though Brutus murdered Caesar, who was a great man and an honorable man, oh, no, well, they're all honorable, aren't they? Brutus was an honorable man. So a prolepsis is a way of using language, which the media is doing right now, to influence how you think and view some very evil things, a prolepsis. And Roe v. Wade is the prolepsis, but the conclusion is in Doe versus Bolton, the companion decision. He wrote them both. This is Justice Blackmun, January 22nd, 1973. And in Doe v. Bolton, he said, okay, I've already established all these many reasons. He gave multifarious reasons why there should be abortion. But it is only in Doe, he says, I'm not going to have women make the choice. He says it several times. He says, in every aspect, this is a medical decision. So I'm not giving women the authority to make and do their own abortions. He's not. He's only given them the authority to ask for an abortion. And it's up to the physician to grant the abortion. That's in Doe versus Bolton, the important companion decision. I think we've talked about it before. I don't know if that's reversed, but that's what I write about in Evil Twins, Roe and Doe, how the Supreme Court unleashed medical killing. Because for the first time in Western civilization, doctors in Doe v. Bolton were given complete authority. And as you know, those of you who have studied Roe a little bit, you know that it's from Doe v. Bolton, the doctor can decide about the life or health. And then it's defined. By health, we mean anything that may impact the woman's well-being, her emotional health, her psychological health, anything that is in the physician's mind. The physician is free to kill according to what they want to do. You can't ask them. And in order to protect them from, and this is from Doe v. Bolton, Doe versus Bolton, to protect them from the shadow of any possible prosecution, we must allow abortion on demand through Roe and Doe. And all these other laws in the states, all these goody-two-shoe people that want to protect innocent babies, no, doctors are now free to kill because they're smart. I always wanted to be a doctor. It's funny. I wish it was funny. When you read his personal desire to have been a doctor, and yet he openly discards the Hippocratic Oath, which is, any anthropologist will tell you, that's the backbone of Western civilization. Protect and care for the vulnerable. Don't just kill them. And before the Hippocratic Oath, there were doctors. In primitive societies, they were called witch doctors. And they were smart. They understood nature. They understood the human body. They understood herbs. And they would come and they would do mumbo jumbo. Right now, doctors use polysyllabic Latin terms, mumbo jumbo. And you just have to say, oh, really? That's what I have? You got to trust them. And witch doctors would do mumbo jumbo. But you never knew if the herbs they gave you were to heal you or kill you. And if you were paying them a chicken, what if your neighbor paid them a goat? Well, once Jacob's gone, I'd kind of like his hut, and I'd kind of like his wife. So I'd kind of like, doctor, here's two goats. Make it quick and easy on Jacob. There were no ethics on medicine before the Hippocratic Oath. And that is why that every cultural anthropologist will tell you, Western Civ started with the adoption of the Hippocratic Oath because it codified what we're talking about. It codified it, made it a rule. You don't kill the innocent vulnerable. And of course, when the Judeo-Christian, coming from the commandment, said, yeah, you don't kill the innocent, you don't murder. And again, the commandment, the fifth commandment, depending on which, or the sixth, depending on which version you're going through, is talking about murdering the innocent. It doesn't say don't go to war. It doesn't say don't stop. Policemen can't shoot a criminal. That isn't what it's saying. It's saying make sure that due process of law, make sure that you do not kill the innocent. And that's what's at stake in this debate. So again, back to where we're at right now. The Dobbs decision is not the victory you've been told, and if you unwisely celebrated it, you didn't understand it in its fullness. And American history helps us understand this fullness. The slavery issue helps us understand what's at stake. And we must have either another decision from the Supreme Court that does affirm these are human beings and the law at every level must respect them. How that respect is translated is another thing. That is happening in every one of your states now. And if you're being a religious person about it, I happen to be religious. I'm a Christian. But if I say, well, you're going to follow what I believe. I believe every single baby conceived is a human being. So we're going to have laws, and we're going to force my belief onto those laws. That isn't what the founders did. All of the founders did have some kind of Judeo-Christian background, but they also had different faiths. And so when my friends tell me, well, America's a Christian nation, we're a Christian nation. I don't disagree, but I say, oh, yeah, which denomination are we? It's because I've been on elder boards of different denominations, and they go on different tangents. It's very important that we look for self-evident truths that God himself has revealed in nature. Again, go to the book of Romans. I love talking to my Roman Catholic friends. Read the book of Romans. If you love Peter, read the book of Peter, the books of Peter. Read what the scripture says about how we're to conduct ourselves in this wicked world. And we're not just to slap people about the head and shoulders with our personal beliefs. We need to be apt to teach, quick to listen, rightly dividing the word of truth, and rightly explaining it, so that those who've been taken captive in the futility of their mind might come to their senses. So they are no longer doing the will of the devil who has taken them captive. That's what Christians should do. And so that's our challenge, is to understand the moment we live in. That's what it said of David and the men who followed David at Ziklag. They were men who understood their times. They understood what was at stake. We must apply ourselves to that. And no, we should not relent in caring for moms and babies. Don't relent in doing that. And even though it's not appreciated, we need to understand this is the right to life debate, the right, legal right to life debate. And we need to understand how it's been used against us. The debate, the gifts of understanding that the media have been intentional. They've taken knowledge and words and intentionally misled the public and you and I. And unless you gird the loins of your mind, unless you think through what they're really saying and cut through the fog, I appreciate that. Just an aside, I do appreciate that about President Trump. Hang on, he'll interrupt you. And personally, people don't like him apparently, but I do. Vivek Ramaswamy, he cuts through. He doesn't let dishonest stuff get through. He says, no, excuse me, let me finish this point. No, no, there's clarity that needs to be brought. You're using words wrongly, words that have power. You're talking about issues of great import. Let's speak with clarity. That's also a Christian's job. Now, you might, again, my Christian friends, yeah, but Vivek's not a Christian. You listen to him. He understands, and I've talked, even though he's from a tradition of Hinduism, he believes there's one God. It's a self-evident truth. What Aristotle referred to, if you look at nature, God made nature. Again, the book of Romans says this. It's revealed, according to Aristotle, that there is a prime mover. Someone designed this. This is not an accident. Your life, my life, the incredible beauty and perfection of nature, it didn't happen accidentally. It didn't evolve from nothing. Someone put their will and desire into all of this. And if you listen to Vivek, he admits that. So I am not going to demand right now, if I get time with him, I don't know him, but I'd be glad to talk with him further on these things. But he is hitting some nerves because he recognizes what's revealed in nature. And our nation is built, our founders have established this nation on the laws of nature and nature's God, on the self-evident truths that we are created. And we're created equal and endowed with certain rights. And the first one is to be alive. The innocent life needs to be protected.
Wow. Thank you, Brian, for sharing all those, that insight and wisdom. We've got about 5 minutes left. I'm thinking it might be helpful for you to express your thoughts and views on an encouragement or a to-do list for someone in a state that has, that currently has abortion legalized, or on the flip side, for someone who's in an estate that's being attacked, where abortion's illegal and being attacked.
Yes, well, that's exactly our situation. I'm in California, cutting edge of this madness. Our governor is traveling to different states that are pro-life, saying, well, you don't have to be pro-life. Give me your pregnant. Give me your port. We'll pay for the trip. We're going to break your laws. I'm the governor of the state of California. I'm coming into your state to break your laws. It's the Dred Scott decision. That's what's going on. So understand that's what's going on. I want to, again, remind you that, and since we just have 5 minutes, I want to respect what you just asked for. The Dobbs decision says it's up to not your governor. So remember, you live in a republic. And according to the United States Constitution, every state, even states that are called commonwealths, and there's several, they still must enact within their borders a republican form of government, Article 1, Section 4. So we must have, Article 4, Section 4. In your state, right now in California, for example, people are running for school board, for city council, for supervisor. And they're being told by Planned Parenthood, well, we have Prop 1, and it says that women have to have unlimited right to choose. And so we want to put in a school-based clinic in your school. Well, hang on. I'm elected to represent my district, and the money for my district is not controlled by the state. I'm accountable of whether or not you can use our classrooms. I'm elected to have a fiduciary role. I am an elected representative, and Dobbs says, the elected representatives, not some superimposed. Again, we've been acculturated to think, oh, the Supreme Court controls the whole nation. Well, you haven't read the Constitution. You haven't read Federalist Papers. Your elected representatives are there to represent you. So in your town, village, or hamlet in Ohio, in Nebraska, should they overturn the protections of the state, your elected local representatives are still empowered to say, well, in my county, I'm not going to give a grant. That's what they do. You are aware that Planned Parenthood gets grants from the federal government, from state governments, but they also thrive on living off local governments. And if those local elected representatives don't have pro-lifers that are going to say, no, you don't have to give our tax money to them. You're elected to be a fiduciary for that school's tax money. You don't have to let them in. They can invoke Prop 1. It's called Prop 1 in California. But that has to do with the state government's money. You're elected to deal with this local funds. Again, you start locally. All politics is local. This is a political, legal question. Pro-lifers need to be willing to be involved in their own civics, in their own town, in their own state and nation, and not just check out. We're not here to check out and wait till God takes us home. I'm just checking out. That's what Christians did in Nazi Germany. And I can give you plenty of citations for that. We're not here just to hang around and be nice. It's nice to be nice. But we're here to speak the truth We're here to say what is right. And our Constitution has given you locally in your state the power. And it's those local people, as they run for state office, they're the ones that then can address your state law. But if you don't have local people at the local level, you're never going to get an assembly member or Senate member or member of Congress that's pro-life if you're not fighting for those people as they begin their climb up the ladder. So that has to be understood. You need to fight now where you are.
Awesome. Wow. Thank you so much, Brian, for being on here today. I wish we had some more time, but maybe we'll have to pick this back up on our future podcast.
Well, let's do it. I wanted people to hear Ruth Bader Ginsburg, because Ruth Bader Ginsburg agreed that Roe v. Wade did not give women authority. It only gave them permission to ask killer doctors. Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton destroyed the medical profession and made doctors into killers. And if that is lost on you, then the entire right to life, pro-life debate is lost on you. And I want to remind you, when you go to the hospital or the doctor, you need to be careful, because not all doctors now follow the oath. Not all doctors have your best interest in mind. They serve their payers, which often is an HMO, and sometimes it's the government directly. So we live in a huge, huge spiritual battle raging around us. It's our job to cut through that fog. And I appreciate you, Jacob, and what you're doing through your program. So thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, and I'll put the clip here at the end so people can hear it before the end of this podcast.
Another feature of Roe is, well, really isn't about the woman's choice, is it? It's about the doctor's freedom to practice his profession as he thinks best. It wasn't woman-centered. It was physician-centered.
sight, the wedding bells at noon, the sounds of the lost and found, the reaching of our hands, the whale and the lion, the mother and her son, the family of terra firma, creatures of the earth. And know that I am God.